Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. The show is about to begin.
Welcome back to the one and only Cavs the Podcast, featuring commentary from all of your favorite Cavs the Blog bloggers.
Welcome to Cavs the Podcast. I'm Nate Smith, and I am here with
Elijah Kim
and
Chris Francis.
There we go. How are you doing, gentlemen?
Doing all right. Getting a little nervous for tomorrow night for sure, but definitely chugging along.
That's exactly what I thought, Eli. I'm nervous as heck for tomorrow.
Okay, so explain to me why you guys are nervous. Go first, Eli. You started it.
Yeah, I think I'm nervous in a multitude of ways because I think unless the Cavs are picking firsts, they're going to pick the wrong guy between 2 to 5. And then if they drop to 6 or lower, everyone's just going to be like so upset and they're going to be so disappointed and they're going to talk about wanting to trade that pick for Ben Simmons or... You know, there's just going to be a lot of negativity, and then we have to deal with this for a whole month until the actual draft happens. So that's the nervousness. So there's very limited options for the Cavs fans and myself to be super excited about the draft unless we're first, because I'm just worried about who we select anyways.
What about you, Chris? Why are you nervous?
Eli couldn't have said. I mean, it's Kobe Altman for me. You know, that's my permanent grudge right now. And like Eli, I have no faith that he's going to select the right person unless it's the number one pick when it's clear cut like that. And that's basically it. It's just and it's also kind of the fact that Cade specifically is the perfect fit. You know, it's the fit and the talent together that makes it so high stakes. You know, it's like a guy that you can immediately slot in. You know what he's going to do. You know there's a need there, so there's like this perfect marriage there. But you know, after Cade, it becomes a whole bunch of question marks, and then I just don't have any faith that Kobe has a process that's going to bear out for us the best case scenario. So yeah, that's about it.
So I'm with you guys a little bit on, you know, fear of Kobe. It feels like he might, as he often does, zag when he should zig. But I would say the other thing that has me a little worried is just kind of the, I feel like a lot of people that if the Cavs don't get like a top, you know, 2 or 3 pick, they're ready to jump off the cliff as Cavs fans, and I really think that's kind of ridiculous. So I guess my follow-up question to you guys, and Chris, you can go first. If the Cavs don't get first, where do you want them? Do you want them second, or do you want them, you know, as their preferred slot?
I actually kind of agree with where you're going, and to me, it's... I think there's good prospects, you know, anywhere, really. I mean, of course, there's the top four, so that would be nice. I think there's a clear-cut top four, really top three, in my opinion. But, I mean, at least top four by consensus. And then even after that, then you get into some of the Chris Fedor actually had a pretty good article on it. You get into some of the guys that actually fit a need at the wing position. And there seems to be a variety of options post top five, you know, from this 5 to 10 range. So in that sense, I think you're onto something, Nate, you know, that there's talent to be found. It's just a question of whether Kobe can actually find it. So I'm kind of there. I do have a little bit of excitement just investigating some of the other guys that aren't necessarily in the consensus, but it's just my whole nervousness is with Kobe, really. I mean, it's less with the pick and more with just Kobe.
What about you, Eli? If you're not first, you're last? Is that...
No, I think, to me personally, I think this is a two-player draft. So if you're not first, I'm good with second.
Who are you two guys?
So wait. Before you do that... I want to let's start going on who we think is in the top. We'll do a we'll do one roll on the tankathon, and we'll kind of discuss these guys as they come up. So I think that's a good way to do it.
Sounds good.
And then my whole take. I mean, I'm almost like welfare to work, Nate. I feel like the draft. If they're not first, I want the Cavs to be eighth. Because I feel
hey, they
like,
can get ninth apparently too.
Yeah, I feel like the Cavs a little bit are, you know, especially Cavs fandom is like, oh, if you don't get a top five pick, you're screwed. And you know, meanwhile, you see this who's in the conference finals right now. Most of these teams were not built. I mean, obviously, LA was all built through free agency, so that they're not exactly the best case scenario. But if you look in the East with Atlanta and Milwaukee, that team wasn't built with top five picks. You know, that team was built with smart drafting. I mean, obviously, Trae Young doesn't fit that mold exactly. He was the fourth pick, I believe.
Fifth.
Fourth or fifth?
Fifth. Was he fifth? Okay. Yeah, there you go.
Yep. Yeah, so, you know, he doesn't fit that narrative quite as much. But fifth pick is... you know, near where the Cavs are projected right now. So my take is that drafting smart and having a smart organization that develops players for the future is much more important than, you know, what pick you get 2 through 5 or whatever. And winning the lottery is no guarantee of success. I mean, you look at the year that, oh, what's his name? Who's the center for the Suns?
DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah, you look at the year that Ayton came out. Well, Luka Doncic is the best player, and he was taken third. And then you've got Trey was taken fifth. So you don't need that top pick to get the best player. You do need a little bit of luck, but I feel like the Cavs fan base is a little too, you know, oh, woe is us. We need a top pick. It should be handed to us. And I'm a little... a little skeptical on that. So you can call me welfare to work, Nate.
I'll kind of want to add on to that. I also think there's just this, you know, there's this big narrative this year about how this draft is really good. And typically, just the way it works out, like, the hype always exceeds the results typically when it's this hyped. And I'm a little worried that this draft will also kind of be like that where, you know, the media is touting like this is a 5-person draft. You have potentially 5 franchise changers, blah, blah, blah. But then, you know, I'm just hoping it's not a dud for the Cavs' sake. Obviously, they pick in the top 5. But, you know, like last year's draft was hyped so harshly. And there's like, oh, there's really not that much talent in this draft. And I personally thought this past year draft was really underrated, and there are a lot of good key players that emerged out of it. So
good players to come out of the last two drafts. I mean, you're looking at it right now. You look at the number of guys. Hold on. You look at the, sorry, my daughter is singing in the background and now she's making faces at me. So, you look at the number of guys that came out of the second round, in the last 2 years. I mean, you look at Terrence Mann for the Clippers just tearing it up right now. So, you know, I'm with you. I think it's kind of all over the place. I think every draft is a crapshoot, but I think one of the reasons that a lot of people think this draft is really going to be really good is because a lot of people went back into the draft the previous year because of the COVID that might not have come out otherwise, or might have come out in the previous year and kind of stayed an extra year because of, you know, the uncertainty in that year. So it may be a little deeper. But let's take a spin down hypothetical lane, unless one of you guys has a rebuttal to that.
Well, the one thing I will add, just for the analytical nerd brain inside of me wants to say, history has shown top three is usually where you get the superstar, basically. So I think so. While I agree with you 100%, it's about scouting. It's about having an eye for talent, you know, just an organizational discipline towards drafting and developing. But it would be awfully nice if it were top three, you know, so that would be the only addendum I'd add. But yeah, absolutely, Nate, I agree with you 100%. I just hope they made some kind of improvements in that regard.
So you guys are not going to like how my spin on the tankathon went.
Uh-oh.
So here we go. So number one is not the Cavaliers. It is the Houston Rockets. And are you guys all in consensus that Cade Cunningham is the number one pick of this draft?
Oh yeah,
absolutely. Oh, yeah.
So that is who the tankathon has the Cavs taking, or the Rockets taking. So he can fight with the point guard duties with Kevin Porter Jr. we'll see how that works out. And then number two, who do you have number two, Eli, on your big board? You say it's a too deep draft.
Yeah, and even though I say it's a too deep draft, I still think there's, you know, kind of a, there is a gap between Cade and my second player, but then there's a even bigger gap from two to three, in my opinion.
So who's your
My second player is Evan Mobley. I'm a big Mobley fan, and I think that he is the clear-cut number two in this draft, in my opinion.
So the tankathon has him at number two and going to the Detroit Pistons, which would be a kick in the stomach for Eli, as that team starts to build a pretty solid young roster if he were to go there. 7 foot, 215 pounds from USC. Tell me why you like Evan Mobley so much, Eli.
Yeah, I just think he's the prototypical big man for today's NBA. He's skilled enough to put the ball on the floor. He can shoot the three. You know, it's not perfect yet, but he shows signs that he can shoot pretty well from the outside. Defensively, he's, you know, quick enough to switch out. He's not an elite perimeter defender, but, you know, he's good enough to be dangerous out there when switched in those situations. So, you know, everything just screams that he can do everything required to in today's NBA as a 7-footer. You know, there are areas for improvement. He's pretty, you know, thin and wiry at just 215 pounds and 7 feet tall. He doesn't have a lot of experience kind of leading an offense, which, you know, as a superstar big man, you will get the responsibility of doing that. But, you know, I think he's a very underrated passer. His teammates at USC weren't the greatest, so some of his assist numbers are a little lower than you would like for someone who you tout as a good passer. But, you know, there's just a lot to like, I think. And, you know, in addition to what I like about him, I just kind of have bigger questions about, you know, Jalen Green and Jalen Suggs. So that's kind of why I think Mobley is the clear-cut number two for me on my board.
Sorry, Chris, is he number two on your board?
I'd have to say so. Yeah, I mean,
let me caveat that. Is he number two overall, and is he number two for the Cavs?
I would say yes and
yes, and you cut out there. Maybe yes. That's a yes. Yes, and
yeah,
yes.
I think he should be number. Yeah. I'm a BPA guy. Just as a general philosophy, and I get why that might be controversial, but I think he should be number. He's the number two prospect in my mind, and he should be the number two prospect for the Cavs. But I would say that the gap between two and three is I would differ on Eli that there's a big gap between the second and third.
So who do you have number three?
I see it as number three in my mind is Jalen Suggs. And I get why some have him fourth. There's questions about his ability to score. And also his ability to shoot the three. But I just think there's some analytical indicators that say he's got a good enough touch. He can get to the rim pretty well by himself in isolation situations, especially as he did as a freshman. The biggest thing is his basketball IQ. It's just adding a guy that knows the game, knows how to impact the game without scoring in a variety of ways, playmaking, defending, moving the ball, just being smart with the ball, making good decisions. 2.4
steals a game, which is usually
a
really his big feel indicator of NBA success.
Yeah, his feel for the game is excellent, I think. I mean, it's elite. It's the same the way that I feel about, honestly, about Mobley. Mobley's another guy who I would argue is he's got a high IQ, knows the game, knows it on a intrinsic level, instinctual level. And I put Suggs up there too. And I think didn't Suggs shoot about 80% free throws? So, I mean, that's to me a threshold. I would consider that a threshold for a good shoot. Okay, 75%. So he's close enough. He did shoot three threes a game. It's a little ugly at 34%, but he still did shoot at volume. And I think the 75% free throw shooting is an indicator of touch and shooting touch. And so I think that he could become a legitimate scorer with a three ball, and just the passing and the defensive instinctual defensive playmaking. It's funny because it kind of stands in stark contrast to Sexton, who's a, bona fide scorer. But what else does he bring to the table? Well, if you wanted a counterpoint, is what else does a guy needs to bring to the table? Jalen Suggs is that guy,
I my only questions on Suggs are his size. He's pretty light for 6'4", and a pretty, Of course, he's not as light as Jalen Green, so so that is a little bit of a dichotomy. But I think he certainly has all the tools. I wouldn't have a problem with him. He's interestingly not who Tankathon had rated number three. Number three to the Orlando Magic was Jalen Green, who played in the G League. A wispy 6'6", 178 pounds, but averaged 20 and 5. Rebounds in the G League bubble, which it's really hard to get a feel on that. So there's a lot of that's going to come down to individual workouts. And, my take is these G League guys are going to have a harder development curve. Following up to that, we've got Oklahoma City taking Jalen Suggs at 4 for the old Tankathon, which would actually be a super dynamic backcourt for them between him and SGA. Long term. And then of course the Cavs fall in at number 5, and Eli, if the Cavs were to get the number 5 pick, and you can talk about Jalen Green a little bit and Suggs if you want, but if the Cavs were to get the number 5 pick, who would you want them to take there?
I think you have to take Kuminga because he has the most upside in the draft, but it also has a really low floor in my opinion, so he could be a bust. But at this point for the Cavs, you need to swing for the fences, and he's kind of the last of the group that I think could potentially be a franchise player. It'll take longer with him, and he'll have to get more coaching and a lot more trial by error, but I think that's who the Cavs have to take. Personally, I would even consider Scotty Barnes in this spot too. I really like Scotty Barnes' game. But I think in the end, I still will have to go with Kuminga just because he has all the athletic tools and, flashes of being a potentially dominant wing, in the NBA.
And, you were going back and forth a little bit on, Twitter today of the Scotty Barnes, Ben Simmons comps. And is there a comp there?
Honestly, I think that just because they play good defense and they're long, people compare them. But I think Ben Simmons is definitely better. He's just like a much better athlete than Barnes is. I think when I think of athleticism, there are guys who are explosive, can leap out of a gym. You know, those are guys like LeBron, Donovan Mitchell, Ja Morant. And then you got other guys who are athletic but more smooth, which who are like Kawhi, you know, PG, that type of athleticism. And Barnes definitely fits into the latter group, whereas I think Simmons does have some of that explosiveness of the first group I mentioned. So it's just a different type of athleticism. And I think Barnes may shoot a little bit better, but he's definitely not the passer. I don't think that Simmons has demonstrated so far. So it'd be an interesting fit. I mean, at six, I would definitely think Barnes is probably the top guy for me. But at five, I still think you got to try to swing for the fences and go for a guy like Kuminga.
I would say the other guy, or the other stat that kind of compares him to Ben Simmons is that, you know, 5.9 assists per game. And he's also a guy that gets a lot of steals. He's definitely, he almost reminds me of, who was the Bulls pick last year? McDaniels?
Pat Williams.
Pat Williams, yeah. So I don't know where I got McDaniels. But, you know, in that he kind of doesn't really slot to a traditional NBA position, and he's kind of a weird hybrid. And you know, Barnes reminds me of that a little bit, too. Do you have any take on the, you know, Jalen Green, Jalen Suggs? Who do you rank 3 and 4?
Yeah, so for me, I actually have Green at 3 and Suggs at 4.
So tell us a little bit about Green.
So I think Green can be the best scorer in this draft. He has that explosive athleticism that I talk about. You know, he's a good jumper. Where he does lack, and he's a decent shooter at this point, where I think he kind of lacks is he does get a little tunnel vision, I think, and he isn't the playmaker that you know, that you would like as the guy who's 6'6". And he's also, you know, physically pretty thin and undeveloped. He's under 190 pounds, so I get the concerns, but I think you just see so much athleticism and potential in his offensive game, and that's just hard to... That's the hardest thing and the most important thing that people look for, I feel like, in these top picks. You know, people go for the guys who can score 25 a night, and then, you know, hopefully can develop the defense and the playmaking. So that's why I have him at 3 ahead of Suggs. And my concern with Suggs is, you know, he's a bit older than all these guys, too. He's already 20 years old. And, you know, he played under a very good coach. And, you know, I think I'm just a little worried that his shooting is really mechanical and just seems a little unnatural to me. And I just feel like his handle and his, like, passing is not as good as advertised. He does turn the ball over a lot more than people realize, I believe. I think he's at, like, 3 a game, basically. And I just don't think he has elite vision. And he's not like an elite size guy. So that's why it's hard for me to kind of peg him as, you know, this potential superstar for sure. Obviously, he could develop those tools, but he's better at, you know, the little things versus like the big things to me. Like, he's going to be a bulldog. He's going to be tenacious guarding you. He'll go, you know, through screens and do all the little things great. But I'm just a little worried that he can't score 20 points a game easily, and he'll come a little uglier, and he can't you know, shoot lights out when he's open, or, you know, get 10 assists a game. So that's kind of just where my concern is with Suggs. I think he has great, you know, he can get there, but to me, I just don't see that right now.
Yeah,
and that's why I'm fourth.
I watched him a lot in the tournament, and he strikes me as a guy, like I said, that's a little small for the NBA. But he's also a super heady player. I actually think his best position in the pros probably is point guard, or, you know, in one of these hybrid guard roles. You know, with the ball in his hands a good bit as a scoring threat with the ability to distribute, and I think his basketball IQ would help him there. Unfortunately, that makes his usefulness on the Cavs a little bit suspect. You know, I guess I'll ask you a follow-up question. At what point do you think the Cavs would have to get a draft pick? Like, is it 3? Is it 4? Where they would start to think about trading back, Eli?
I think if they are at 4, they would think about trading back. Because I think they would take Green. And I honestly think that they wouldn't take Suggs at 3 because I think the Cavs are very worried about fit too. You can't keep drafting, you know, players under 6'4 just every year and then expect it to work out. And I think if anything, the playoffs are further kind of proving that out right now. You know, these teams are all getting to the finals because the CP3 being a minor exception, but you know, it's just you need size, you need the ability to create your own shot, and that's harder to do when you're 6'2, 6'3 than
yeah. Oh, 6'6". I totally think that, and you know, one of the things that I've seen in this playoffs has really been the death of the skip pass, because that skip pass with these kind of overloading the zone defenses, you know, these hybrid zone man defenses, the skip pass with how long these defenders are now is just so hard. And, you know, the taller guys are, the easier it is to take that away. And I just, like you said, I think it's really becoming a 6'4 and up league. You have to be really special to be small in the NBA anymore, or you have to be really strong. And it's changing just so incredibly rapidly is the other issue. So I'm with you. I think, you know, 4 lower, the Cavs really do look to trade down. And I think that's a real possibility in this draft where there's several teams with multiple first-round picks. You know, if Golden State has multiple first-rounders but isn't in that top 3 or 4, you know, maybe they look to trade up. You look at a team like the Rockets, and you look at a team like the Thunder, also have multiple first-round picks. So I definitely think there's options to trade down, both for draft picks in this draft and in the future, and for players too, especially if, you know, you have a shot at a guy like Jalen Suggs. He doesn't make sense for your team. And I'll kind of say I have a lot of guys that I like as prospects for the Cavs that aren't in that top, you know, 4 or 5 range. You know that the guy I'm going to say that I am really enamored of is Josh Giddey, who, you know, lit up the Australian League last year at, you know, averaging 12-8-8 as a 6'8" point guard. And, you know, another guy who lit up the Australian League last year was LaMelo Ball. So I think that's a really good league, and you got to look at those numbers and say, hey, maybe this guy can contribute. Because that is a league that's populated with a lot of guys who have NBA talent, were in the NBA. It's definitely something to look at. The other guy that intrigues me, if the Cavs aren't in that top range, is the Turkish the Turkish center, Alperen Sengun. I'm not quite sure how to pronounce his first name.
Close enough.
He played for Besiktas in Turkey and just put up some really eye-popping numbers for the EuroLeague. 24, 11, and 3 assists. And he's definitely, you know, not a great three-point shooter, but he also shot 80% from the free throw line, which usually is a pretty big indicator for a big man that he'll have that touch as a pro. And I'm intrigued with his skill set as well. And he kind of, to me, would be a nice consolation if they don't get a guy like, you know, Evan Mobley as a big. And, you know, all these big guys are guys that if they were to draft a 4 or 5 would really put the onus on them to move Kevin Love somehow, because there would just be a logjam at the big spot with Jared Allen and Larry Nance coming back. What about you, Chris? Is there anybody that isn't, that we kind of haven't talked about, that you're intrigued if the Cavs fall back into, you know, 7, 8, 9 in that area?
Oh yeah. I mean, the big one is Jalen Johnson from Duke. I'm obviously biased about him, but I think,
why are you biased? Are you a Dukie?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I thought we knew you. I'm afraid we got to let you go from your unpaid position at Cavs the Bluff.
Yes, I'm sorry. It's a character flaw. I admit it, but, hey, I like winners. So, one of my first basketball memories was, Duke beating the undefeated UNLV, running Rebels, the Jerry Tarkanian Rebels. So, they were an underdog back then. So, you know, when you root for Duke, you're actually rooting for an underdog. People don't know this, but it's true. So, but anyway, with Jalen Johnson, I mean, he's just, to me, the guy that you roll the dice on with star potential. He's got, the usage for a freshman and the, free throw rate for a freshman, that you want to see, of a scoring star, you know, as Eli alluded to. I will push back, I guess, on the Jalen Suggs thing. Is what I was going to say is those are the two promising indicators for, Suggs's ability as an isolation scorer. Is, he has a pretty high free throw rate at 43.432. And a 25% usage rate, which is, you know, it's not 30%, but it's high enough to where he was taking a load. And I think, if anything, the tournament showed that he was pretty much the only guy that could create his own shot on that Gonzaga squad when you reach the final four and stuff like that. So
I'm going to jump in and interrupt you real quick.
Yeah, sure.
Cause Eli has to take off. Any parting shots, Eli, anything to watch out for in the lottery, or, you know, nightmare or dream scenarios for you?
Well, the dream is one. Nightmare is probably 4 or 5, to be honest. that being said, you know, whatever happens, it happens. There's nothing we can do to influence or anything. So just support them and let's go Cavs, man.
Yeah, and it's just basketball.
That's right.
It's just basketball.
Okay, have a good evening, Eli.
Yeah, take care, Eli.
So, given that, I'm pretty excited about the lottery tomorrow. It's our first real, well, if you're listening to this, it's probably this evening, because you're probably be listening to it tomorrow. But the first real Cavs news in a while, and this is our first night without a playoff game in some time.
I know.
It's weird. It's a little weird. It's been, I gotta say, the playoffs have been pretty fantastic so far. I mean, you've had your dud series, like your Phoenix Denver series, which I think was really marred by the injury to, you know, Jamal Murray. That was just a nightmare matchup for them.
Yep.
And kudos to Phoenix for just putting them away and taking care of business, which they did again against the Clippers last night.
Sans CP3.
But there's just been a ton of fallout from, you know, the playoffs so far. I mean, let's talk about the biggest story today. If you're a Cavs fan, or at least you follow the Cavs on Twitter, the Sixers losing to Atlanta, which, first of all, Atlanta, who the Cavs seem to own in the regular season, just went on a stratospheric run ever since Nate McMillan took over. Mm-hmm. And they got healthy. I will say that their health corresponded with him taking over. But I don't think anybody predicted them to get to the conference finals, past just an utter implosion by the 76ers, who really missed Green, mm-hmm. Danny Green, just for his shooting and because so they would not have to play Seth Curry so much.
And well, Curry wasn't the problem. Curry was, it's funny you say that, because Curry was probably the second best Philly in that series, like without a doubt.
You mean Sixer? Yeah.
Yep, Sixer. Sorry. Yes.
No.
He was probably the second best.
At least offensively. I will say, you know, all around it may have been Tobias Harris, but yeah, at least offensively. I mean, Embiid was the straw that stirs the drink for them, but obviously the big storyline is just the utter disappearance of Ben Simmons, who didn't even want the ball in his hands in the fourth quarter, and yet Doc Rivers was still playing him, yet not letting him touch the ball or putting him in a roll situation. It was very odd. I called it, he was playing him at the clunker spot, you know, instead of the dunker spot. So Cavs Twitter today alive with the prospect of trading for Ben Simmons, which mm-hmm. is, you know, a devil's bargain if there ever was one. Mm-hmm. I am not a fan. I think the guy hasn't improved his, you know, NBA game in 6 years. Why are you taking a shot on him now? You know, I guess the news late today was that he's committing to working on his offensive game and his shooting before next season. I'm like, well, why did it take you so long?
Yeah.
Although I think the other fraud that was exposed in this series was Doc Rivers, who...
Absolutely. Amen. Oh, boy.
Yeah. So what's your take on the... Should the Cavs try to trade for Ben Simmons? Give me your 3-minute take, or your 60-second take.
My take that I shared last night on the boards, on the open thread, was... sure, you take them, but you've got to get something. I mean, you've got to get something in return. Basically, that's a
salary terrible, dump at this point.
Absolutely. It's a terrible he's going into year one of a 5-year extension here.
Yeah.
You know, or four, you know, whatever it is. He's got over $100 million on the books for the next 4 years, and he's unplayable in the playoffs. So you've got to get some assets if you're planning to take on Simmons. So yeah, I'm down for Simmons, but unless you're getting something in return, then unless you're getting something like dumping Love and also getting a pick or two, I think at least one first round, if not two first round picks, you know, that's gotta be like,
so that contract minimum is over $140 million for the next 4 years.
Yep, there you go. And he was unplayable in a second-round playoff game.
Yeah, you're paying a guy next year $33 million, and then in his fourth year, $40 million, mm-hmm. Who currently cannot score in pressure situations, is afraid to get fouled. That's a really, really tough sell for me. And obviously his value is super low right now.
Exactly. Right.
My opinion is the current NBA, you know, you've seen it over and over and over again. Offense trumps almost everything in the NBA right now.
Exactly.
It is so hard to defend in the NBA. And even if you take a guy who struggled like Giannis, he's still a guy because of his ability to drive and his ability to, you know, get off offensive rebounds and score and feed his teammates and move without the ball and score in transition. He's still a guy that can get you 30 points in a playoff game. And I give Giannis all the credit in the world for stepping up, doing what he could, and, you know, being good enough at the free throw line against the Nets to win that game, which, you know, you and I watched that game. That game was an absolute war of attrition. And one of the most bizarre games that I've seen, that overtime game, basically overtime because Kevin Durant, you know, was over the 3-point line by a millimeter,
yes,
shooting that three. And, you know, as you know, one of my favorite bloggers or Twitterers, Whitney, posted, the Bucks may have won that game because PJ Tucker fouled out and they didn't have to, and they didn't, he saved Bud from himself.
Oh yeah,
putting him on Durant, but
yeah. Well, it's funny that to me, I was sharing this among Sixers fans who were very critical of the Bucks. They're like mirror images of each other. That was the conclusion I reached from the Nets Bucks series. Is the Bucks won kind of in spite of themselves? Like Bud is awful. Like I can't see, like they're really in a pickle, it seems, because I don't know how you can fire a guy, you know, when he conquers a couple of demons like, you know, the Heat and the Bucks in one playoff year. But Bud's rotations and strategy is just as questionable, in my opinion, as Doc's. So, but well, Giannis,
I'll give Bud credit for winning that last game and playing a much shortened rotation that he absolutely has been destroyed for earlier in the playoffs and in previous seasons. And I will also say that he stuck with Brook Lopez, and Brook Lopez was brilliant in Game 7.
He made some huge plays.
He had four blocks, had a ton of big threes, and I think that's the one big difference, you know, team construction-wise of Milwaukee compared to Philadelphia is the guys outside of Giannis and Ben Simmons can all shoot on, or at least the people they were playing on Milwaukee. And obviously, you know, Jrue Holiday was struggling, but hit a timely shot or two and got to the line and at least went one, at least did enough to win. Whereas for Philly, they, you know, the scoring was hard to come by for sure.
It was, and,
Embiid really struggled in the second half of all those games against Atlanta.
Well, speaking of scoring, I guess, you and Eli made a great point, you know, with respect to the Jalen Green conversation, because in the playoffs, it's about isolation scoring. You know, the game completely changes. As you said, like the passes aren't there. The passing lanes aren't there. You've got to be able to create your own shot. And so that, you know, that's a feather in the cap of guys like, look who emerged in these playoffs. It's Devin Booker, Donovan Mitchell, you know, these two guys who've been much maligned as just limited scorers who all of a sudden they come alive in the playoffs because that's the type of player you need instead of a Ben Simmons, you know, or even, you know, even a Jrue Holiday whose scoring has completely left him, you know.
Well, he's always been kind of super streaky like that.
Okay. Yeah. See, I'm
he's had really good years and really mediocre years. He always seems to have good years when his contract's up.
Well, I mean, he did make those, at least he had no fear, you know, on the, like, I remember he hit a couple of fourth quarter threes where you, and he had the mental toughness to keep shooting, even though he was bricking everything. So,
I really thought that the refs were absolutely hosing Milwaukee that game. And it was good to see Milwaukee get a couple of calls, you know, without about 90 seconds and a minute left to kind of even out the free throw situation a little bit, because it was like 25-14. And it felt like, you know, it felt like the Nets were throwing themselves into guys for fouls, as, you know, Kevin Durant, not as much, but James Harden is definitely want to do. And it was really interesting to see how that game shook out. And it was a really good game. I would say the other game that was one of just the most fascinating games I've ever watched was the Clippers-Utah game 7. I have never seen a team or a player get absolutely roasted for an entire fourth quarter and not get subbed out the way we, not even fourth quarter, third and fourth quarter, the way we saw Rudy Gobert just destroyed by Ty Lue and the Clippers when they basically put Gobert on Terrence Mann and dared Terrence Mann to beat him from the corner, and he did over and over and over, and Utah just never adjusted.
Right. Well, one thing I will say is if you go back and look at the stats to that game, the real difference was, as fun as it is to slander Rudy Gobert, the real difference was turnovers on offense for Utah. I think they had 10 more turnovers than the Clippers for the game, and they were also outscored in fast break points 31-4.
Yeah, so, and that's definitely part of that.
Yeah.
And I would say a lot of that comes back to, you know, what we talked about earlier. When you are playing these non-ISO lineups, you have to be able to hit that skip pass. And against these really long defenses, it is really hard. Although I would say not every part of that was due to skip passes. Some of that was just fatigue. Some of that was really good defense, obviously. And some of that was just guys with butterfingers. or, mm-hmm. you know, flubbing passes. But,
yeah.
you know, I was really surprised. I thought Utah was going to win that. Utah probably, you know, there was a lot of these series where the team should have closed them out early. I mean, Philly really should have closed out Atlanta in game five, and they didn't. Yep. And then who did you see? The Bucks should have closed out the Nets in game five.
Yep.
And then won two in a row to get it. And I actually think the Nets were a little stunned that the Bucks stuck around and that they couldn't come back. But I also think the other thing is that the Nets ran out of gas. And mm-hmm. I really thought it was a big mistake for Durant to just come down and take that three in isolation with his tires as he was. He should have got his legs under him out of a timeout. And then they could have got a two or a three.
Yeah, well, you talk about shrunk rotations. I mean, not just Bud. I mean, pretty much.
Steve Nash. It was a six man rotation for both.
Yes, exactly. And they were just pretty wild.
I mean, it reminded me a lot of the Cavs, the Game 7 from 2016. Absolutely.
And, well, someone made a joke about Steve Nash. In my Twitter group chat, which was, what if Steve Nash's secret as a coach was knowing that players aren't actually as tired as they say?
Yeah.
So that was the ace in the hole, is he was going to go just like a five or six man rotation.
For sure. I mean, it's really interesting to watch those games. I don't know if you get the sense of how far behind that level of NBA basketball the Cavs are, but it feels like it's a whole nother league.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, if you go back, well, that was the thing in doing research and doing research on the teams prior to the playoffs and making picks. One of the things that stood out was some of the teams that were underrated, like Atlanta, the Suns. You go back and look at their roster; they're legitimately 7 and 8 deep. Yeah. Like they have 7 or 8 players that would start in the NBA. You know what I mean? And that's really the thing, is like, how many of those guys do we have on the Cavs squad? Maybe two.
Yeah,
maybe two. Yeah, you know,
who would be starters on a second round playoff team?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so there's your gap, is we can't even field 5 legitimate NBA starters, where these, you know, the Clippers, the Suns, the Jazz, like that's the thing, is it was funny. People were burying the Clippers after the Kawhi injury. And it's like, they still have Reggie Jackson, you know, Terrence Mann, I don't remember whichever brother it is. You know,
I don't know if it's Marcus or Marquise. Now I got.
Yeah, look. Yeah, it's Marcus. I think it's the Marcus. Dumb one. Yeah, right, exactly. But I mean, you know, even with those, Conley was out, and even though those guys are out, they're still 6 or 7 deep. You know what I mean?
And as Jazz were that deep too. But they kind of committed to a play style that, I you know, the Clippers just took away from them.
Right.
They didn't have a counter.
Yep. And that's the thing, is people are calling the Jazz the frauds. Jazz are the frauds. Well, they ran into the Clippers, who possibly are the deepest team.
Well, I would say the other part of that is, you know, Donovan Mitchell was hurt.
Yes. Conley didn't play. Right. Exactly. Yeah, for most of the season.
And that hurts.
Yes.
I would say the other part of that is the Clippers are running those lineups where every guy on the floor is 6'7" and 220 pounds.
Absolutely. You know, and they're two way players.
They can play matchup zone everywhere.
Yep.
Because the biggest guy in some of those was Reggie Jackson. I will say the other thing, you know, Reggie Jackson and Terrence Mann, just from out of nowhere for Monster mm-hmm. Series. I mean, Reggie Jackson, we all thought he was washed when he left Detroit 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, we just thought he was done.
Yeah. Well, and actually that's you know, what's funny, there's your contrast between Lou and Doc, because actually last year, I remember talking with the Clips fan, why aren't you trying? They needed offense so bad, and they wouldn't try Reggie Jackson until game six, game seven. He had already lost his scoring rhythm. Well, you have Ty Lue, you know, credit to him. He's unafraid of mixing it up. You know, he benched his starting center. He, you know, he was playing Rondo, benched him for Reggie Jackson.
Well, so. And then the crazy thing, you see the next game against Phoenix, he's running different lineups again.
Yep, you're right.
And yeah, and it's almost what you have to do. I mean, every single game is a different strategy. Yes. And I think he was just brilliant in game seven. And I love to see it. I love to see that he is the coach in the Western Conference Finals over, who's the coach of the Lakers? Vogel.
Oh, you know, right. Yeah.
Because the Lakers didn't want to pay him for that third year or fifth year.
Oh, is that what the issue was?
Yeah, they didn't want to give him, only wanted to give him like a 3-year deal instead of a 5-year deal or something. Man. He's like, I want championship coach money. And, you know, the other guy who's just going to absolutely get paid is Nate McMillan, who is a free agent as a head coaching candidate. Somebody's going to back up Isaiah Thomas's Brinks truck for him.
So. That's right. Good callback.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to get so much money, and
I was thinking of your coach of the year, Monty Williams, conference
coach of the year. I thought was Nate McMillan.
Oh, was it Nate McMillan? Yeah, okay, I thought you.
Although I'm a huge Monty Williams fan.
Yes. That's what I remember. Okay.
I think Monty Williams is a fantastic coach. I think there's so many good coach. There were so many coach of the year candidates this year. Thibodeau. I think Thibodeau would have been third on my list, but you know, Monty Williams was number two and Nate McMillan was number one for me. And they're really proving it. And Ty Lue, just a monster playoffs. And, and I don't know when Kawhi Leonard's coming back or if he is, but I give him all the credit in the world. Let me rephrase. NBA champion Tyronn Lue.
That's right. We respect our champions here at CTV.
Yeah, and I love just how much the 2016 championship team is, you know, a factor in this playoffs.
That's right.
You know, you got Kyrie Irving. You've got James Jones. You've got Tyronn Lue. Is there anybody I'm forgetting?
Oh man, it feels like there's more, right? I mean, shoot. You know, I mean, that's enough, you know, really, isn't it? You know, they're in the conference finals still.
Yeah,
so,
for sure. But that's three of the four teams had a guy. Well, not three, I guess the Nets weren't, but
right. At three of the eight. So
yeah, three of the eight. So yeah, it was super fun, and two of the four. So
yep. Yeah.
So I'm excited to see that. Do you have any big memories that came your way just with the anniversary? It was yesterday, I believe.
Yeah, it was funny. I watched the extended highlight clip of that whole series, and just the skill in scoring and passing, and just the overall skill that was displayed in that series.
Yeah, the level of play is as high of caliber of basketball as I've ever seen played.
Absolutely. It was just insane. Absolutely insane. Like the shot makers, you know, with LeBron, Kyrie, Steph, you know, Clay. Yep.
Oh, the first half that Draymond Green had in game seven was like, oh my God, the Cavs are hosed.
Yeah, exactly. Right. He did 30 in a game seven, you know? So
His first half was monstrous. And then of course, you know, J.R. Smith with eight points coming out of the locker room.
Yeah.
In the second half that were so enormous. So.
Absolutely. Saved it from going down double digits in the third quarter there. And so in a tight game. And so what was funny was as I was watching the clip, I got emotional. Like I felt the same emotion.
I can't listen to that Fred McLeod clip without getting choked up a little.
Yeah. And I don't know it's just it's the beauty of sports and sharing a moment with people, you know,
but so where were you when they won?
I was in Grand Forks, North Dakota. you know, my girlfriend's a travel nurse, and that was her first assignment, was Grand Forks, North Dakota. So I was all by myself.
The height of the oil boom.
Yeah, exactly. I was all by myself, except for, you know, occasionally commenting in. I couldn't even take CTB. I was just such a nervous wreck. You know, I checked in, read the comments, was lurking, but I was just spellbound and pacing back and forth in front of my TV in Grand Forks, North Dakota. And so that was mine. How about you?
I was watching in my living room with my best friend, who we kind of watched the whole series, and it was kind of the last hurrah for him, because I think the next year he got married in September.
Ooh,
and
wow.
He's in his late 40s and had 2 kids in 3 years, so his life was pretty much over as he knew it.
Wow.
And I see him about once every 3 months now, but
yeah.
We were watching that. I mean, I wish him all the best.
It's just a funny thing.
But and then my niece was with us too, and I just remember jumping up and down and yelling, they did it, and we were all huddled up, and I just started spraying beer all over my house.
That's awesome. Oh my god.
And then I was gonna be like, I'm gonna drive my car around the block honking it, and I decided I'll just drive it to the end of the driveway and honk it back and forth and just pull it back in the
garage. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
I did not clean the beer off the ceiling for about 3 years, 3.5 years.
Oh my goodness.
Just
because
it was such a happy memory.
Yeah, right. Was it a Corona like deli? Were you drinking?
I don't remember
Corona?
What it was. to be honest with you, I should have remembered. I should have memorialized the beer, but I'm sure it was not a Corona.
Okay.
I think I can count on one hand the number of Coronas I've drank.
Oh wow, Well, I just thought, you know, because you're the ultimate deli guy, so you know.
I didn't know that was his drink of choice till after.
That's right. He was that's in true. Vegas.
So, and I think I remember the other thing I remember about that was just what a fun summer it was celebrating that all summer. You had the Cavs at the Tribe games, and then you saw basically the best World Series I think you'll ever see played between the Tribe and the Cubs, that fall. So it was a pretty fantastic summer, with that Cavs win. So I'm, you know, forever will remember that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just amazing. I never thought it would happen for Cleveland. You know, it's just one of those things, you know, because I grew up with Ernest Biner, the fumble, you know, and then 2001 Indians, you know, and just assumed it was a curse, you know? Just assumed it. So
2015 with Love and Kyrie getting hurt.
Right, exactly. Oh man. Yeah. Oh man. So
it's something I'll treasure my whole life. So
it's funny. It's funny. Like I just hope that you know, that's what you play the games for. You know, that's what you're doing this for. Is that, you know what I mean? Like
it's not to make a play-in game.
thank you. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. No, and I got into that with Eli a little bit on Twitter today, because I was like, you know, I think part of my opposition to trading for Simmons is maybe I'm letting the perfect be the enemy of the good, but it just seems like I'm with you. If you're going to take that contract on, you better be getting some assets.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like them getting off that contract and having Kevin Love's contract as a trade chip in the next year, you know?
I don't think it'll be a chip, but...
At least they could use that salary, or someone can use that salary to facilitate moves, you know? So, with and also the fact that it has 2 less years on it. So, he even fits, honestly, just with the shooting or whatever, but, you know, he's probably washed, but...
Who knows? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. Well, look at Blake. You know, I guess look at Blake Griffin. You know, if there's a tale about market inefficiency, that was one of the discussions about how the contenders or near contenders get better. And there's the idea of there's a market inefficiency with vets that want to chase a ring. you know, and yeah, Kevin and Love would fit.
My take on it is that players released after the trade deadline should not be playoff eligible.
Right, right.
Because I think it's, you know, they're literally depressing their value and playing like garbage so that they get released instead of getting traded. And I think it's, I think it's just bad for the league all the way.
I would tend to, I mean, it's definitely bad for those teams that need to recoup an asset, you know what I mean? Yeah. For a player that's decent. So,
yeah. And I don't know, do you have a take on this, you know, my current pet peeve? And I think of more than one person I follow's current pet peeve is just the hand wringing over, oh no, not the highest markets are not in the finals. Or in the conference finals. Like, what will we ever do about the ratings? And I'm like, you know, the NFL had a Super Bowl between New Orleans, well, between Tampa and New England. Those are not the biggest markets in the NFL, and they're doing just fine.
Right.
You know, this whole thing about markets, I would love if the NBA embraced parity and got rid of super teams altogether, and these teams just... These playoffs are exciting and unpredictable and fun. You know,
absolutely.
They've been a blast.
I mean, that's yes, and also I 100% agree. And it's the fact that it's been LeBron or Steph for the past decade plus. This is how you get new stars. This is how you get a Booker exposure, Giannis exposure. Isn't he a two-time
MVP.
Yeah, exactly. Like
a guy like Drew Holiday, who's been an all-star, great two-way player in the league forever.
Yeah, CP3, a chance at a legacy. You know, like a real, you know, like this is his Hall of Fame candidacy that we're witnessing.
Well, I mean, he's already a Hall of Fame point guard.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, of course.
This would definitely be the capstone to his career.
Yeah, yeah, and you know. And PG has a redemption story there, and now Trae Young, you know, DeAndre Ayton, whom you mentioned, these are two guys that were blasted, you know, because they weren't Luka, but they're contributing to their teams.
Playoff P.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. So there's so many good storylines, and there's so many good players that, I mean, and let's call it what it is. It's really just casuals and media types that are really, they're just sad their favorite team isn't in. You know?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the reason I want the Cavs to get the 8th pick is just to weed the casuals out of Cavs Twitter. So,
yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah. Well, I'm with you there. Like I said, I'm with you there as far as it's about having an eye for talent and evaluating. And stars can be, you know, I just think back to, you know, MPJ and Shy, and these guys are going to be emerging. You know, these guys are going to be emerging soon. Halliburton, you know, is now, you know, there's talk about him year two and figuring out the scoring. And so, and like, you know, I mean, you've already said like Giannis and Gobert, and, you know, there's, you know, although Gobert is probably a bad example now.
No, I don't think he's a bad example.
Go ahead.
The Clippers, part of what happened there is the Clippers got so hot that the Jazz just needed to do something different. I mean, I would have put Royce O'Neal at center and, you know, played a smaller lineup. They certainly had the bodies to do it.
Yeah.
And they just refused. I mean, you know, yeah, Gobert got exposed a little bit, but he's still a guy that helps you immensely in the regular season. And, that wasn't his matchup. But I will say the other side of that, and I thought Quinn Snyder just got absolutely exposed. I'm like, what are you doing? You've got to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people talk about trading for Ben Simmons. Well, I'm like, well, if that's the math that you're doing and you're going to trade for a contract like that, why don't you trade Jared Allen for Rudy Gobert? I mean, if they're not going to pay the luxury tax to keep Mike Conley, why don't you offer that to them? You know,
I mean, it's funny because I feel like there's kind of a question there that's being asked a little bit is the value of a big, what is the value of a big?
Especially if they can't shoot and they can't step
exactly
up.
Exactly. And can't defend the perimeter.
I mean, you look, the Clips were playing Batum at center or Terrence Mann at center.
Right.
They really didn't have a center. They were just playing all switchy. They were playing, you know, Reggie Jackson and four guys that can switch.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. And then, oh God, and Dwight Howard, what a disaster!
Oh yeah,
Doc. Oh my goodness.
I mean,
so you know, and so it kind of begs the question. Well,
and
in the
that's
future,
like a lot of people said, why wasn't their bench unit just Ben Simmons and four shooters?
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. But and then Doc refused to play Ben Simmons alone without Dwight Howard on the court for whatever the reason.
Which is just
you already know. Yeah. So, but I think it raises an interesting question, which the Cavs will have to face this offseason, is what is the value of Jared Allen ultimately in an NBA that thrives on two-way wings as the preeminent player to have,
or playmaking wings. So. I mean, it almost feels like you can have one guy on the floor who can't shoot threes anymore. That's what it feels like. And that player is either your center or your power forward usually.
Yep.
I mean, in the case of the Bucks, it's Giannis.
Yep.
But, or in the case of Utah, it's Gobert. Or in the case of, Phoenix, it's Ayton. But there's only one guy anymore for most teams.
Yeah.
And the Cavs, the way they're built, either Larry Nance has got to become a real good three-point shooter or they got to figure out some stuff. So I don't know. I mean,
yeah. Well,
I would love to see Jared Allen shooting more threes and get a little quicker release. But
yeah, that would be amazing. Well, another thing that kind of gets thrown into question is you had Utah, which was a small guard dominant team. I mean, it goes 6'1", 6'2", 6'1", 6'1", 6'4", just like the Cavs on the perimeter. And Gobert really was hiding the fact that they have tiny guards that can't defend on the perimeter.
Wow.
And that's with Conley, who's one of the best guard defenders in the league.
I think their defense was really bad against the Clippers. I think they started to develop some really bad habits in the previous two series, or the previous series against Memphis. Mm-hmm. And I think it really carried over to that series. They defended much better in the regular season than they did in the playoffs. And their defense was not good in the playoffs. And I think it has less to do with size and more to do with just execution. Because even if you're small, you should still be able to contain some durable penetration.
Right.
But I also think it was scheme, too, because...
Well, I guess one caveat is Conley is their best perimeter defender. And what did he even play?
Yeah, he didn't. And we all know, Jordan Clarkson.
Right.
His ceiling is below average perimeter defender.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
his ceiling is an engaged J.R. Smith.
Right. Exactly. And as you know, it's funny with Mitchell, as the more offensive burden he's taken is concurrent with a decline in his defensive performance.
Yeah, well, and I would say his injuries, I mean, clearly he was missing
the
ankle injury.
Was bad. Yeah.
Did not help him defensively either.
100% agree. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I certainly...
Who do you like? Who do you like?
I'm going to go... This is tough. I'm going to go
know.
Milwaukee. So one of the things I think that Phoenix really has in their player favor is I think that rest they got. One of the things that really hurt Utah is when they had long rests, they were really rusty coming back.
Mm-hmm.
You saw it against the Grizzlies in game one, and then you saw it against the Clippers early, and I think it made it hard for them to close that series out. Phoenix absolutely took care of business, and they didn't even have Paul George.
Right.
Or not Paul George, Chris Paul.
Right.
And I think their relative health and, the rest they've gotten is really going to carry them through that series. And I think, if both teams were rested and healthy, I would pick, the Clippers. But because the Suns, were really smart about closing out Denver, they have the advantage. I'm going to pick them in the finals. And, I also think that the defensive mismatches that Atlanta found against Philly, they will not have Steph Curry to pick on every game.
Mm-hmm.
or not Steph, mm-hmm. Seth Curry to pick on every game, and Tobias
Harris. Better Curry.
Yeah. They will not have, you know, a couple of mediocre defenders on the floor at all time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Milwaukee will do a much better job of containing them. Because Milwaukee is much stronger and much more sound defensively.
Yeah.
Right. That being said, I never put anything past Coach Bud.
Exactly. Yes. Stinking. This is the limb you're going on.
Yeah. So I'm still gonna pick Milwaukee because it just feels like their year a little bit. I mean, if they can survive that mm-hmm. Nets series, it feels like it might be their year. So yeah. I mean, when I saw Giannis bank in that three against the Nets, I was like, this might be their year. I mean, those are like the kinds of things that happen when it's your year.
You need luck. You need luck to win. So
I will say the other thing around that is I've never seen a team make so many dumb offensive plays in a row that Milwaukee seems to do over and over and over. Of course, you know, that being said, it still wasn't as dumb as Quinn Snyder's refusal to sub out Rudy Gobert. And it just keep getting destroyed by Terrence Mann. Yeah. But anyway, what were you going
to
say?
No. I mean, I'm in agreement with you. My assumption is Kawhi won't play and that CP3 will. And if that's the case, I would take Phoenix as well. I would also probably take the Bucks based on experience. Although I'm in agreement
with
you.
You're so nervous about that, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the thing is, you know, the Trae Young and Kevin Huerter.
Oh, they're my favorite nickname in the NBA right
now. Red Velvet?
Red Velvet. I love it. It's such a great nickname.
Man, I mean, he won them that game seven. You know, Trey couldn't shoot and he made clutch shots and still passed the ball well, but it was really Kevin Huerter's shot making and ability to create his own shot that really, he was the guy. He was the guy in that
2018 19th pick.
Yes. Yes.
You know, so you don't have to pick a lottery player to get a really good player.
And it was too trollish to say, but I feel like it's now not as trollish to say. I would rather have Huerter than Colin Sexton. I would rather have him as a troll. But that's the kind of shot making that's you know what he really surprised me with is he can attack off the dribble. He's not just a Klay Thompson spot up shooter that can't dribble, or Danny Green who can't dribble. He's got a little bit of a shake to him that that really came in handy last night, you know, for Philly or for Atlanta. So
I think we've seen already three guys in this playoffs that you might pick over him, and the other guy is Miles Bridges, who is having great postseason and man, just looks like an absolute all-around stud.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to use that term, but he just looks so solid in every single phase of the game.
Yeah.
And
I mean, he's not the scorer that Sexton is. I mean, not a lot of guys are, but there's more aspects to the game than scoring.
He feels like more of a guy that you can play on a winning team.
Yes, he's scalable. Exactly. That's the term that they love using. He's a guy that doesn't need the ball in his hands to affect the game. And it also, I think with the Clippers and your point about their roster is 100% true. Is this in this day and age, the premium is playmaking wings or 3-and-D wings are the currency in today's NBA. And Miles Bridges, you know, the only thing he's lacking really is the playmaking. And I don't even know if that's even necessarily true. They're a great passing team.
And he plays the role. I mean, he's usually finishing the play on a cut or
exactly.
Or
exactly.
A shot.
Yeah, and he finishes well. He can finish at the rim because of his length. He can shoot the three. He's always been able to shoot the three. And he can defend. He can make plays on the – so he can play both ends of the court, and that's what you need in today's game. And so, you know – So I get why, you know, going back to our draft conversation, I get why Green would be higher, more highly rated than a Suggs, you know, based on that. Length is the key to defense, you know. Yeah. Length is the key to defense, and if you don't have it, you're going to struggle on defense.
So, yeah, and I think, you know, that's if there's a guy on the Cavs roster that reminds me a little bit of that, it's Lamar Stevens.
Yeah, right.
Lamar, if there's a guy I feel like could really stick from the bottom end of the Cavs roster, it's Lamar Stevens. Because, like, if he gets a shot, he can be, you know, Mikal Bridges.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's one of the best athletes in the NBA. Like, funny enough, I ran across
cussed himself on the backboard.
Absolutely. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I saw. He tested at the combine, and he has one of the highest verts in the 40-inch vert, you know, jumps out of the gym. One of the quickest. He's, you know, one of the quickest in the shuttle runs. You know, he's just a. He's like Terrence Mann as the comparison that I made in the roster review. And that's the kind of guy you investigate at the margins of a roster.
Oh, absolutely. Is just,
you know, and what did he prove this year as a rookie? He proved he can play NBA defense.
Oh, yeah.
Right off the bat.
He has a good game inside of 15 feet too.
He does. No, you're that's a great point. He did, like, he was making that mid range. You know, he was making that mid range, and he was finishing at the basket at a very high level. He
won a game. So,
exactly. Yeah, against Atlanta, the conference, you know, finalist, Atlanta Hawks. Yeah. So yeah, absolutely. So
That is the other thing that I feel like Atlanta has. Atlanta almost reminds me of the 2015 Warriors, where it's like the Red Seas parted, and, you know, and they got the way that just kind of everything's broken perfectly for them to have a deep playoff run. It was like so many things had to go right, and they have been.
Other than Daniel.
Yeah, Trae Young's probably my least favorite player in the NBA, but
yes, he's a villain.
He has, when he's not playing for cheap fouls, he's been really good.
Yeah, yeah. I like the fact that he's embraced the villain role. You know, he's been a really nice heel in these playoffs. Like
definitely a team of heels. Yeah, there was.
Yes, you're right. Who
wrote a piece on that this last week? It might have been the Ringer.
Did you see John Collins' shirt?
No.
That he wore post game. Oh,
what was it?
He was wearing a shirt of his dunk over Joel Embiid, where he's got Embiid in a headlock as he's dunking. He did it somehow. The refs missed that offensive foul call, but he was wearing a shirt post game with the picture of him headlocking Joel.
Did you see the misprint? Illegal black market tea for the Hawks with Tristan Thompson on.
Yes. And then I saw it. Didn't you or somebody make the joke? Oh, it was nice to add. It was nice to add Horford's father.
Well, and now Horford and Love are in the same locker room, so it's the first father son duo in the NBA.
There you go.
That joke writes itself. It's so
yes,
great.
It does. Yes, yeah. Yes.
And we didn't even talk about that. Just all the crazy stuff that's gone on in the league. I mean, I feel like we're just in for a roller coaster of a summer. With it, almost feels like pent up demand for chaos.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Well, I think it's the thing. I think the thing that you kind of alluded to it with all the belly aching for media types about ratings and stuff. Is that the change of the guard is happening. The change, you know, like, how old is LeBron? He's 36.
36 or 37. Yeah. He'll be 37 next year.
Yeah, he'll be 37.
Mortal this year.
Yeah, Steph is 34, 33, 34. You know, he's got maybe a couple. I mean, even Kawhi. Kawhi is now on the wrong side of 30. Like, Durant is 30, you know, 31. Same with James Harden. So,
and it's really interesting. I love... you know, one of the things I talked about is Phoenix. I feel like when you have these older guys, you have to have a deeper roster because you have to protect them a little more.
Absolutely. That's a great, you know, that's a fantastic point, because especially in a, like you've alluded to it, you know, at times that I've seen is this season was insanity. It was
absolute. It was such a meat grinder.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was unhealthy. It was literally unhealthy.
I mean, the light weeks were three games.
Exactly. Right. Which, yeah, exactly. Totally. Exactly. So
heavy weeks were four and horrible weeks were five.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Which is, it was just total insanity. And it was something that it's something that it's ironic that LeBron came out and complained about it when he's the vice president of the Players Association.
Well, you know, let's be honest, it was about everybody getting paid. And there's no shame in that.
Absolutely.
There's
no shame in admitting that. No, absolutely. Yes, 100%.
NBA owners are not going to pay you not to play. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. So it was so, you know, so. Well,
and let's not pretend that these teams aren't hemorrhaging money.
Yeah,
you know, it's going to be really interesting to see a team like Boston who just paid somebody to take Kemba Walker.
Yeah,
with a draft pick, or you know, Utah. What are they going to do with Mike Conley and Rudy Gobert? Are they going to be able to trade them both? Are they going to go into luxury tax? You look at another team like Phoenix. You know, with Chris Paul suddenly. Remember how that contract was a boat anchor?
And
he's probably going to opt out and sign another contract. It's just crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. It was mind blowing that he even I was floored that he turned down $40 billion. You know,
million? You mean?
Yeah, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, if I missed.
Well, he hasn't turned it down yet.
That's true. Good point. Good point.
Chris Paul could always get hurt before the end of the season, and you don't. You know, knock on wood. I don't wish that for him.
Absolutely.
He does have COVID right now, and
I know.
Fortunately, he was vaccinated, which it looks like he's going to make a quick recovery. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's definitely a weird one.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's been a crazy offseason. I mean, Parabolos Vulgaris.
Oh my! We haven't even talked about Dallas. I know.
Dallas is a train wreck. You know, all these people trying to move Luka to the Cavs because of the huge Slovenian. Yes,
I will drive that train. I will absolutely drive that train. Sell the farm. Bring the Slovenian home. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, he is the next. He's the next LeBron. Let's make it. Let's make it real. So. But yeah, I don't know if I mean, it's crazy that now. I mean, how many franchises have just been completely obliterated over these playoffs? I mean, you got, like you just said, Dallas.
Dallas, you've got
Philly, maybe.
Philly is probably going to get blown up. You've got, who else? Utah has got a lot of questions that they've got to answer.
Yeah.
You know, LA is a mess because they have a lot of contracts that and players that don't make sense next to LeBron.
Yep.
And
an overpaid
diva and Anthony Davis. Who else? We got Miami. Well, how many teams didn't trade for James Harden that felt kind of dumb? I mean, they didn't trade because of. Oh, what's his name?
Tyler Hero. Yes, Hero. Exactly. Course,
Philly didn't. So I heard two things. Philly didn't want to trade Simmons, but I also heard that Fertitta didn't want to deal with Daryl Morey.
Yeah. So. And also to go deeper with that, it was also a question of money because Simmons had already signed his extension and Fertitta's broke.
Oh, right.
And doesn't want to pay anything. So he got supposedly Philly offered a Godfather offer that was a lot more attractive basketball wise for Houston, but he's broke and didn't want to pay. Yeah. So.
Well, I mean, they didn't even want to get Jared Allen and they got
Oladipo,
who they got almost nothing for instead.
Right, right, exactly. And he was an expiring, right? If I recall. There you go. So, yeah.
And he basically told him in no uncertain terms would he sign a contract extension or re-sign with them, so they had to trade him to Miami for a second rounder, and then he stunk for Miami. So
yeah. So they got nothing for Harden, did they? I mean, geez.
Well, they got draft picks from.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah, they got draft picks from Milwaukee and Brooklyn.
There you go. Yeah, you know, those non-lottery. Well, I shouldn't joke. I mean, yeah. I would love them for the Cavs, so. Yeah. But yeah.
So anyway, yeah, there's a lot of pent-up chaos around the NBA, and it'll be interesting to see what happens in the.
Got some more coming tomorrow night.
Some more, yeah, yeah. Playoff games and a crazy, crazy lottery. So
yes, sir. Yes, should sir. Be fun.
Anything yes, to pitch? Any parting shots? Any good stories in the last few weeks?
Well, there's two things. I'll make them Cavs related for our CTB folk. The first thing is Larry Nance up for the Community Assist Award. I thought that was really cool, and also talking about, you know, because I just did the power forward roster review, and just, you know, how he's been this season was crap, but, you know, his professionalism, you know, on the court, off the court, you know, those are the kind of guys you need to win. You know what I mean?
I am so wishing for him for health for next year.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I could wish one thing for the Cavs, it would be world peace. And the second thing would be for Larry Nance Jr. to stay healthy.
Heck yeah. Cause I mean, he was really blossoming on the defensive end. You know, he was solid, you know, if not unspectacular on the offensive end, and just his leadership and his professionalism, you know what I mean? Yeah. It is so.
I think he had a lot to do to keep with keeping the locker room from going sideways.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and he was up for an award. He raised $250,000 for local businesses. So that was really cool.
No, he was super cool. He was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And the second thing is I'll give you a little shout out to Mean Dean Wade, or James Dean Wade. One of the most interesting nuggets that I found in doing a little research on the roster review is his performance in small ball lineups. I was shocked that
he a five or a four?
Just both. He was really both. He played, you know, he was interchangeable, but he was playing basically a stretch big. He was a switchable stretch big. That it was, he wasn't a total turnstile in rim protection or, you know, in defensive rotations, and he could shoot the ball. And so it was really fascinating to see that he really performed well with both Nance and Love in small ball lineups, especially for the offense. Like as anemic as the Cavs offense was this year, it was clear that he was a boost in some of those small ball lineups. So,
I think he could have been so much better if they made a consistent effort to get him the ball
In
his spots. I mean, right. How many times did you see him play, you know, 12 minutes and get one shot attempt?
Exactly. No, amen, brother. I mean, yeah, absolutely. You know, and you need to get shooters in rhythm. You need to find some rhythm find shots for them to get into rhythm. So, yeah, absolutely. Like, and it's just a nice story of, you know, like there's that theme and I guess this is something I got to begrudgingly give Kobe Altman credit for, is just working the margins, you know, working the margins of a roster. Lamar Stevens, Dean Wade, some nice stories there, at the margins of the roster, even Broderick Thomas, you know.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I think he's been great at the margins. It's been the mid first rounders, you know, the 2019 draft I've been pretty disappointed in so far, especially with as many good players as were taken in the second round, you know, Terrence Mann.
Think of all the bevy of Memphis Grizzlies taken in the second round. Desmond Bane.
Well, that was 2020.
Oh, was that 2020? Yeah, my bad. Tillman, Brandon Clark, Spencer Tillman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was a second rounder for them.
Yeah. And, and also D'Anthony Melton was a big time backup point guard for them.
They've definitely mined the draft well.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. So that's my pitch. You know, shout out to Larry Nance Jr. and James Dean Wade. So how about you, man?
I don't know if I have too much Cavs related. I will say I've been watching a really, really, really dark sci-fi series on Epix. It's the reboot of War of the Worlds. And there's not a lot of actors, American actors, in it because it's a very Eurocentric production. But Gabriel Byrne is probably the biggest named actor in it, and he's really good. But I guess one of the things I really like about it so much is how dark it is, from a standpoint of, like, there'll be a major character that they'll just kill off instantly from out of nowhere. And you're like, holy crap. Like, there's no, you know, sacred cows when it comes to who they're going to kill or not kill. and that part of it is just, like, refreshing. Like, they cross some lines that I haven't seen from who gets killed in a TV standpoint that I may have never seen in a TV show. So it was really interesting. So I enjoyed that. It's about on the third episode of the second season now, but it was a fun first season. The second season, I don't know if fun's the right word, but it was definitely riveting. I'll put it that way.
Okay. Yeah.
Second season has been, and I will say that it's paced really well. It doesn't really lag. But the second season has been a total shift. And I'm not sure if it's good or not, but I feel like it's a pretty binge-worthy show. So I will recommend that on Epix, a little off the beaten path for that show. So
sounds great.
I'm really interested to see this new Edgar Wright movie, The Sparks Brothers, which I know nothing about other than Edgar Wright directed it, and I love Edgar Wright movies. So
okay. What other movies has he done?
He did the Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz and The World's End, as well as Baby Driver and Scott Pilgrim versus the World. So he's with the Nick Frost.
That's an interesting milieu. Yeah,
and he's just a really, really good, really talented director. So I know EG is a fan as well.
I know. I was thinking about you, EG, man. Yeah, absolutely.
Hopefully he will be back in the fold soon. So
we'll see. Miss him on the podcast.
Even if he's not, we miss you, EG, and we love you, brother.
Yes, sir.
And I think that's all I got. So go Cavs, 1-8 for me.
All right, go Cavs. Cade Cunningham, let's go.
Go Cavs.
Go Cavs.
Thank you for listening to Cavs the Blogs podcast. Check back soon for some more fun with your favorite bloggers. There's a fire. Lost your home. Lose your partner.